A week ago, the week before Easter, as I've been saying, I took a week's vacation. That week was the spring break week for the Los Angeles Unified School District, where my husband works as a middle school teacher. So he had the week off, and I took a week off too. And Jim planned a great trip for us. We drove from Los Angeles through Las Vegas, and we spent an evening in Springdale, Utah, which is this little town just outside of Zion National Park. The next morning, we didn't stay in Zion, but the next morning we continued our drive into Utah, stopping at Bryce Canyon, where we hiked for a couple of hours in the afternoon. It was very cold, at least by the standards of two guys who have lived our entire lives in Los Angeles. And then that evening, we drove on to Boulder, Utah. We stayed in Boulder 3 days, hiking around Escalante Grand Staircase National Monument. And then we drove up to Torrey, Utah, and spent another 3 days hiking around the Capitol Reef National Park. That's where we took that long hike up to Navajo Knobs that I talked about last week. And then for our final day, we drove back to Las Vegas, and we spent one night in Vegas. Now, neither Jim nor I are gamblers. Mostly, I don't understand the appeal of Las Vegas, although I do admit a certain fascination with the place. So we didn't spend a night in Vegas because we really wanted to go to Vegas. Vegas just happened to be a place along the way. But since we were there, Jim made reservations at an old-school Italian restaurant called Piero's, where Martin Scorsese had filmed a couple of scenes from the movie Casino. So red leather booths and Dean Martin on the wall and martinis and all that. And then Jim bought tickets for us to see the Penn and Teller show. Now, I love magic shows. I mean, really love them. Jim and I see a lot of theater and opera and classical music concerts. I've got pretty highbrow tastes for the most part, not accepting the occasional drag show in the basement of a gay bar. But I enjoy the opera and the symphony in a restrained way. I enjoy magic shows in a giddy way. Jim and I saw a close-up magic show a few months ago where, after one of the tricks, I actually squealed. So going to see Penn and Teller was pretty exciting for me. And as we were on our way to the theater, I told Jim that if Penn and Teller asked for volunteers from the audience, my hand was going to go straight up. Well, it turned out I did not get on the stage of the Penn and Teller Theater at the Rio Hotel in Las Vegas that evening. Our tickets turned out to be about halfway back from the stage on a slightly raised mezzanine level. So there really wasn't any possibility for folks in our section to actually leave our seats to get on the stage. So no problem, I still enjoyed the show. Teller especially did a couple of amazingly beautiful tricks with balloons and coins and goldfish that were lovely. I tell this story to introduce this theme of how in a community we can either be all the way in or we can be close but removed. We can participate or we can observe. We can be on the orchestra level or the mezzanine or up on the stage. I've been spending some time during these first several months working with you, exploring how the specialized form of interim ministry differs from the settled ministry that you had with Reverend Ranema and that you will have again with whomever you call as your next settled minister in the year 2020. And right there is one important difference. The minister who will come after me will come to you because after a lengthy search process, your congregation will vote to call that minister. You will elect a search committee about a year from now. The search committee will prepare information, screen applicants, conduct interviews, observe a couple of likely candidates, and finally will present one candidate to you who you will meet during an intensive week, concluding with a congregational vote to either call the candidate or not, and for the candidate to either accept your call or not. So settled ministers are called interim ministers are hired. Yes, that's all. Your interim minister search committee was appointed by your board, not elected by the congregation, and they followed a rigorous but very shortened process. The goal of the search process for a settled minister is to bring forth a candidate that the congregation as a whole will consider with the questions, do we wish to invite this person into our lives, to be our spiritual leader, to join us as one of us, to lead us but also to work beside us, share themselves with us, and allow us to fully share ourselves with them. The goal of the search process for an interim minister is to hire a minister to work through a discrete set of tasks that experience teaches us are important for a congregation to address during the transition period. Interim ministry isn't just settled ministry with a predetermined end date. It's really a different job. Settled ministry is about creating relationships and then using those relationships to move the congregation and its members toward greater spiritual health and maturity. Interim ministry is about consulting on a few developmental tasks that prepare the congregation for the ministry that will follow. Settled ministers plant themselves in the church. My job is to turn over the ground, but to resist planting myself so that when I take my leave, my departure doesn't just set up another round of grieving as the congregation faces yet another loss. So I'm not Reverend Ranima in a lot of ways, as you've no doubt already noticed. But one of the biggest differences was that the basis of Reverend Ranima's ministry, as is the basis for all settled ministry, is relationships, where the basis for my interim ministry is consultation. The settled minister's job is to get up on stage with you in the service of making the magic of church happen. My job is to stay in the audience, watching what you're doing, and then offering my advice about which acts are working, which aren't, and which might work if we did them differently. Your settled minister will be part of the show. I'm more like a director, hired to come in and freshen up an act that has been running for years, but maybe getting a little stale, or the seams in the costumes are starting to show. The settled minister's job is to be involved, to crawl up inside that magic box, or to hold the top hat, or feed the rabbit. Sometimes a settled minister is the magician, sometimes the assistant, sometimes the stagehand, sometimes the settled minister is the loyal friend who comforts the performers after a rough night. The settled minister is part of the troupe, an integral part of the team. It's a special kind of relationship within the life of a church community that forms the basis of what you want from a settled minister. And that's the kind of question that you should ask as you search for your next settled minister. Is this a person I want up on stage with me, working beside and with me? My job as an interim minister doesn't require that kind of relationship. In fact, that kind of relationship would make interim ministry impossible. During the 2 years and 3 months that I still have with you, I wouldn't be able to do the work you need me to do with you if I was also doing the very different work of trying to become a part of your act and building relationships with you. What churches need now and then, and the transition period of interim ministry between settled ministers provides this, is a chance to take the church apart and put it back together again, to be critical, to say, you know, this doesn't really work. I can see the false bottom under the platform that you're standing on. You know, this habit of doing things doesn't really serve you anymore. To say, frankly, guys, this is 2018, and you're doing an act that hasn't worked in Las Vegas since 1975. that same problem that keeps coming up time and time again in the stories that I'm hearing from your past is just going to come up again in the future unless we take a look at the structure you've created and finally fix the flaw in the system that invites that kind of problem. I need to say some hard truths when I see them in a limited amount of time. As contestants often say on reality shows, I'm not here to make friends. Now, I don't say that to be mean, because I like you. I really like you. And I want you to like me, too. We all need friends. And even people who aren't friends should be friendly. But at this point in the life of this church, you've got different work to do. So let's be laser focused on the work that will best serve this church during the limited time I'm with you. The work you need to do, the work I need to do, the work we all need to do together, and how we can best be together in order to facilitate that work. When I first learned of this difference between settled ministry and interim ministry, that settled ministry is relational and interim ministry is consultative, I felt a twinge of sadness. Oh no, I said to myself, I don't know if I'm going to like that. It was that same twinge of sadness I felt when I got to the Penn and Teller stage at the Rio Hotel, and I realized that because our seats were on the mezzanine, I wasn't going to be able to volunteer to be on the stage. I like joining things. I like being in the middle of things. When you ask me if I'll sing a tenor solo at your St. Patrick's Day party, I'll say yes. I'm actually a very strong introvert. And one thing that I most love about churches is that a church community gives me a controlled environment where I can feel safe opening myself up to people and having those kinds of intimate relationships that everybody needs, but I'm not good at creating in a strictly social environment. I cherish the relationships that I've formed through church communities over the years. I love doing relational ministry as a professional. And I've never been an interim minister before. I wasn't sure that I could keep myself from falling in love with you. What I've discovered now that I'm here is that I don't have to keep myself from falling in love with you. I do love you already. And I will come to know you better and more intimately and love you even more deeply as we spend these next 2 years and 3 months together. But what I have learned is something else about the character of love. So, a story. One other highlight of this vacation week that Jim and I took hiking in Utah was a hike in the Capitol Reef National Park to a feature that's called Cassidy Arch. Cassidy Arch is a giant natural arch that connects two sides of a very deep canyon. It's named for Butch Cassidy, who supposedly hid out in these canyons while he was evading the law. So the hike climbs up from the floor of the canyon, and when you get to the arch, you're actually behind the arch at the top of the canyon. So you're standing at the level of the top of the arch, and then you're looking down through the opening of the arch into this deep gorge underneath. And you can sit or stand safely at the back of the canyon, but the gorge opens up very steeply right in front of you. So it feels like you're standing on the edge of a cliff, looking out at the arch spanning about 200 vertical feet of empty air. It's breathtaking. It's also a little nerve-wracking. When we got to the arch, there were other people already there, of course, and more that came up after us. A lot of people enjoyed walking out and around to the arch, then walking onto the top of the arch itself, and then having someone take their picture with this dramatic open space beneath them. I declined to do that. During the hike up to the arch, Jim and I had been followed by a family, a mom and a dad, and four kids who were probably age 10 to like late teens. The kids whined about the hiking, made constant noise, they ignored signs to stay on the trail, just the kind of behavior that's guaranteed to annoy two middle-aged men who don't have children of our own. and the parents seemed completely incapable of disciplining their children. When we got to the arch, we found out why. The eldest teenager wanted a picture on top of the arch. So he walked out to the arch and stood on top of it. Jim and I watched. Standing in the middle of the arch, the kid turned sideways, and I realized he didn't want just a regular picture like everybody else. From the arch, he yelled back to his dad, who was going to take the picture to set up the shot. And slowly, I realized what was about to happen. The kid intended to jump into the air and have his dad take his picture while the kid did a backflip before he landed again on the arch, hopefully. I was horrified. The kid did his backflip, he landed safely, and then the dad yelled, "I didn't get the picture." "Do you want to do it again?" I yelled out, "No!" But they ignored me. So the dad told his son to do it again. He told his own son to do a backflip while standing on a narrow arch 200 feet above a rock gorge. This is like interim ministry. Imagine that the church is a system where there is a rock arch and a gorge and church members doing backflips on the arch. And one part of this system, intimately involved in this system, in relationship with the part of the system that's doing the backflips on the arch, has the role of taking pictures and encouraging the backflips. I'm sure the dad loves his teenage son. Who am I to judge? He says, judging. But there could be a different kind of love, right? Directed to that teenaged boy doing backflips on the arch. It's less intimate love, just as heartfelt. Love expressed from someone who is actually a stranger to the system. Here am I, sitting safely apart, unrelated to the people in this story, observing. And with this kid, who I'm not in relationship with, or with his family, who in a few more minutes will walk away from and never see them again. When this kid prepared to do his backflip, I felt compelled to yell out the word, "No!" That's love too, isn't it? I didn't have to be in relationship with this backflipping boy to love him. I could even feel mostly annoyed at him and his family and still love them. Even a stranger doesn't want to see a foolish teenager die a horrible death. Another mom of a different kid at the arch observing all this whispered to me when the kid did his backflip and landed safely, "Thank God, that could have ruined everybody's day." Exactly so. One question that student ministers always ask when they are first learning to write sermons is, when do I say we and when do I say you? They are asking, when I'm preaching, am I part of the congregation or am I separate from it? The answer is that a preacher is a little of both, part of the community, but in a special role. Every church needs a minister who is one of them, but also not just one of them. Every minister is a little of both, but settled ministers do their best work on the we side, while interim ministers stand a little closer to the you side. Both sides, we and you, are the side of love. Think about the various kinds of relationships that you have and communities that you're involved in. With some communities, you are all the way in, integral, participating, leading, essential. Some communities, though, you hold back. You observe, advise, and you allow others to lead. Love relationships, like a marriage or parents and children, have both sides in them. The times that you are a unit, partners, a team bound together and acting as one. And sometimes love is letting the other person do their thing, take their risk, maybe even make a mistake, while you love with your whole heart from a distance. Church communities ultimately are about love. And ministry of all types is about loving. That is the work we are here for, in interim or in settled ministry, in times of upheaval, change, and transition, and in times of calm and stability, if there ever are such times. It is love to observe and to be amazed at what the performers can do, and to squeal when they complete the trick successfully. It is love to critique and advise, as it is love to affirm and support and help. It is love to put on a show, and it is love to take a show apart before you put it back together in a new way. So let us love one another, and let us learn to love in yet this new way. When this interim ministry ends, let us part in love, and let us work together now to set the stage, so to speak, for the different kind of love that you will have in your future.